Hey folks, in this interview, I sit down with my big sister, Cheryl Holman, to talk about how she's helping people in Chicago get back to work. This is TWIP. All right, folks, welcome back to another episode of This Week in Photo. This is the first interview that I've done outside of the genre of photography, and it's for good reason. If you're on my email list, you may have seen late 2018, I put out an email looking for donations for help with a program called CAPS, Community Assistance Programs, out of Chicago, that's helping do a lot of cool things. We're going to talk about that. But the cool thing about this particular interview is I am joined by my big sister. Yes, I am not an only child. I'm joined by my big sister, who is the founder and CEO of Community Assistance Programs in Chicago. And we're going to talk a little bit about what she's doing and how she put that company together and why and what they're trying to do now. So, Cheryl Holman, welcome to This Week in Photo.
Well, I'm so proud to be on here with my little brother.
I'm not so little anymore.
It's true. We all are.
This is going to be good. So I'm excited to talk to you about this. So let's dive right in. I know all this stuff, but my audience does not know this stuff. So give us the sort of the background, the history, the origin story of Community Assistance Programs. Why did you put it together and what is it all about?
Well, Community Assistance Programs is a not-for-profit, and we started in 1993. And Fred helped me start with the logo, and he was one of my first employers, partners. So we provide employment and training for people who have a very difficult time finding a job, and that is people that get out of jail, people that have low skills, low education. And we have had to get involved in a lot of the problems that are going on with violence. So we have served more than 17,000 people in the Chicagoland area. We work with more than 4,000 employers and who have hired from us or taken training with us or worked with our clients. We call people that we get jobs clients. Mm-hmm. So this has been a very useful agency. It's really categorized as a social service agency because we're helping people and they don't pay us. We survive off of government contracts and donations from people like you.
Yeah. Yeah. And when people ask me about what you do, normally what I tell them is I'm not an expert, obviously, but I try to boil it down to, well, she helps people and you help train people and give them skills. And then through government grants and other income sources, you place them inside of companies that need the skills that you've trained them to have. And you pay their salaries for an amount of time. And then at the end of that period, the company has the option to take that employee on as full time or not. Is that correct?
I'm so proud of you. That's exactly right. Yeah. We found that people that have been jobless for a long time have a difficult time transitioning into work. So we give what we call work experience so they can learn how to go to work on time, be on time. And you'd be very, very surprised. These aren't just youth. These are some adults that have not been successful in getting work that, you know, is meaningful and long lasting. So yes, we pay for employers to, we pay the worker to work for an employer so they can learn how to do the job. But we also get government funding to pay for training to get certification in specific jobs. And what we do is we use what the employer says to hire people. If they say, well, if they know how to work this machine, then we'll hire them. We have mechanics that say if they can change the oil and they can do this and we can show them how to do that in a couple of weeks, then we do that. Our real niche is that we work with people who are getting out of jail and are really trying to turn their lives around. And we get employers who want to hire them because, believe it or not, they are my best customers. They are the ones that will go to work very quickly. They are the ones that want to prove that they are worthy of a job. And they're the ones that really want and will drive to do the best job ever for an employer.
And then when you're training your clients up, you know, to get them ready for placement, what does that training look like? Is it just, you know, administrative skills? Or, I mean, I know you said, depending on what the employer needs, you'll, you know, try to give them those skills. But as a baseline, is it resume building skills? What specifically, what are you training people up into?
Well, we do a segment of about 80-hour modules of what we call job readiness training, and that teaches you to go to work on time, do your resumes, how you do application, that kind of thing. And that's just really soft skills. How do you talk, conflict resolution, how do you have workplace vocabulary and that sort of thing. But then there is skill training. There are specific jobs that require specific training, and some of those are in transportation, learn how to use a forklift and work in warehousing or truck driving, or a CNA in healthcare, or a nurse, get in that. Our job is to get them onto a career track so that they can work in that track and then eventually become, get advancement, higher wages, and become successful, productive citizens of society. There are so many people that have missed that are working jobs, and they're making small salaries and can't survive. So training is key to making more money.
And none of this stuff is going to work without funding. And you are the master of grant writing, right? But that said, I know you mentioned there's been some changes with the political climate that have impacted your business negatively, right? So talk to that a little bit, and how you're weathering that storm.
Yeah, it's been very difficult. It's been very difficult in the last few years. We've had government administration changes, and contracts that I've had for 20 years, all of a sudden those contracts changed, and what they were asking for was different, and we weren't aware of it or were told about it. There were a lot of little niches, and so it wasn't just me and my agency. There were several agencies that were affected. We had more than a 40% reduction in social services in Chicago. And when that happens, what happens to the community? They have no help for jobs. So it becomes a state of hopelessness. Yeah. And we have to reach out and look different places. Fortunately, we've got a new administration in Illinois, and we're hoping that we're going to have a new day, and everybody is very excited about it, because we're talking about an increase in minimum wage, because if you do the math, $8.25 is not enough. If your rent is even $600 a month, how do you pay that and have food and clothes? And if you have kids, what do you do about that? So we're really having to look at other ways to continue to do this, because people that are good people are capable of doing bad things when they're hungry or their kids are hungry. Yeah. And so violence increases when people are in a state of hopelessness. Like, they don't have a job. They can't, the agency they went to help them is no longer there. They can't get childcare. They can't get, so it gets to be very difficult. So for the last few years, it's been very difficult for everyone in social services, and we have been trying to rebuild, and especially on the south and west sides of Chicago.
Well, can you paint a picture of Chicago for the people that have never been there and may never even go there, but they hear everything, that all the information they have about Chicago comes third party from the news or from whatever, and they hear there's a lot of violence there, it's dangerous, and you and I know that there's a lot of danger there in certain areas, but there's a lot of beauty and amazing stuff in the Chicagoland area as well. Can you talk a little bit about how you operate in there, and how do you get clients that are in at-risk situations to even want to come to CAPS to get help?
Well, you know, people are not born to be violent or to do things outlaw. It's their situations that make them that way. And Chicago is a beautiful city. I love Chicago. I was born there, as you know. And it has, people sometimes describe it as three different cities. We have the west side, the south side, the north side. And, you know, they each get labeled in different ways, but it's really the economics of it. And Chicago, I am in Roseland, which is one of the Roseland and Inglewood, these are neighborhoods in Chicago. They're South Side communities, and they're some of the most violent communities that there are. Yes, I've seen gunfire. Yes, I've had it in my on my street. Yes, I've had to stay in my office. But I stay there because people like me make a difference, because we had a program, for instance, that was 10,000 people were put to work, and we had 3,000 in our agency alone. They were making $10 an hour working for different employers, and they were caught, and the program was Put Illinois to Work. During that time, we had a significant decrease in violence in the area because people had money. They could shop. They could buy clothes. They could live part of the American dream, or at least see that they could achieve it. When you don't have that, that's when things are different. But Chicago is a beautiful city. We have music. We have all kinds of plays. It is not violent to walk down the street or drive. I drive in Roseland and on the South Side. I live on the South Side. But you know that there are certain situations that are going on. There was just a shooting in the suburbs, Orland. Yeah. Because what happens is people get into these stages of hopelessness, and they feel that that's the only way out. So we have to adjust it. We have to make sure that everybody knows they have access to the American dream. It's just that simple. And it's not that people just want to kill people and they want to be violent. They don't run around with guns looking to hide and trying to kill people. And it's not that kind of situation. It's more of these things happen, they're in the news, and there's a lot of it. But there are a lot of young kids. There's a study in Chicago saying 47% of African-American kids who are 18 to 24 are out of school and out of work. Mm-hmm. So if you don't have social service programs for them, what are they doing? They're getting influence from other things, from other people. And when that happens, what do they do? What is there for them to do? And when they get influence from the gangs, that's where they go. But if you talk to most kids, they do not want to be in a gang. They do not want to carry a gun. But if they're in a neighborhood that their parents can't move out of, the bullying is a struggle, and it is real. Yeah. So, and that's part of it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah, we hear stories all the time. Like there's this story about, Meek Mill, who's a rapper who is very now engaged in activism for prison reform, right? And he went through it and got caught up in there. And, you and I were talking about this through text message the other day, that the whole idea of people that are incarcerated and can't get out of that loop because they can't afford a couple hundred dollars to get out, right? Describe for people that may not know about that sort of that system that people, I call it an eddy, it's an eddy like in the water, where on the edge of the water, there's this little whirlpool that if you get stuck in it, you can't get out of that whirlpool without some outside force. Can you describe that situation?
Well, they have estimated that majority of people that are in jail now are there because they owe fees. Imagine for a moment if you've got a traffic ticket and you didn't pay that ticket. That ticket doubled. You still can't pay it. They sent a warrant for your arrest. You get stopped for something else. They take you to jail. If you don't have the money to get out of jail, you lose your You are in jail, you lose your job, you could lose your car, you could lose everything that you have because you can't get out of jail. There are a lot of people in jail now because they owe fees, not because they're criminals. They have not done anything wrong but a traffic stop, a traffic ticket. So the violent criminals is a small population that's in the prison. There's a book by Peter Edelman called It's Not a Crime to Be Poor, and it's about the criminalization of poverty in America. And you would read these stories over and over. It's a wonderful book because it tells you stories all over the country of how people are locked up, can't get out of jail because they can't pay a fine. And as you're in some states, even charge you for being in jail. So you'll never get out of jail. Yeah. So, we have to look at our criminal justice system. A lot of differently, because we were looking at it like everybody who's in jail is some criminal, and I'm glad those people are locked up because they could be out here hurting me. But if you look at the individuals who are there, they are people that were regular Joe. I had a murderer, and he was a regular guy working a good job every day. He and his wife got in an argument. He went to a bar, got drunk, drove home, got in an accident, killed someone, and he went to jail for murder, for manslaughter.
Wow.
So, you know, his life changed forever. And he was a good worker for years. He was on his job, and he was a white-collar worker, and now he's in jail, and he has a criminal record. Once you get that criminal record, our society looks at you as a criminal. I don't care if you went there for a traffic ticket or you went there for murder. They're still looking at you as a criminal, and they don't want to hire you.
Yeah.
And that's where we come in.
Yeah, it's like branded. It's like getting that scarlet letter branded on you forever, no matter what, no matter how you got it. It's still on there, and people will prejudge and preassess who you are because of that. You know, the details and the footnotes don't really matter. They're just like, okay, you are one of those people. I'm going to categorize you as such, right?
That's right. They're saying 1 in 4. Have a criminal record for some sort of reason, and they're all treated the same.
Yeah, and then part of it, Cheryl, is that whole, what was the documentary you and I were talking about? Oh, from Ava DuVernay, the 13th, right?
Yeah.
And she's talking about the 13th Amendment and that sort of thing, and the idea of the prison industrial complex being a machine that needs people to run. Right. So these traffic stops and this trap of the eddy of getting sucked into that system are in some ways by design to keep that machine lubricated and running properly. Is that, and you're fighting that. Like, one of the questions why I look at what you do as like, I could never do that because I'm the tech nerd entrepreneur of the family. And I look at that and I think how that seems like a immovable force, that whole system of all that stuff that's just designed over hundreds of years to do what it does flawlessly. And you're like the rebel forces fighting against that. How do you do that? Like, how do you have the mindset to go in and fight that headwind day in and day out?
Well, you have to, because, you know, if you're, my mother raised me, our mother raised us to care about people. Our mother was a very caring person, and I spent my life helping other people, and that's why I'm here where I am today. But to change that system, it needs recognition. It needs light shed on it. I can't tell you how many times I've had conversations with people who thought people that were in jail are just people who should be there, and I'm glad they're not on my block. They find out that when one of theirs, like we have the opiate crisis now, okay, when we've had opiate and heroin addicts forever and we were locking them up, now it's a medical crisis. And so when we look at, and how did that happen? Because society looked at that differently. So we have to look at our prison system, because right now we have people in prison who are not prisoners and they're not criminals. And it is killing our society because we don't have enough workers. Any employer will tell you they can't get enough workers, because once they do that background check, everything is gone. Right now in Illinois, we have a lieutenant governor who is committed to Juliana Stratton, and we just elected her, and she's the first African-American lieutenant governor, and her platform is criminal justice reform. She is always focused on it, and she has ideas and keys, and she has it because she's listened. So when you educate people on it, like this program, letting people know and about the tickets and people that are in jail, really look at who's in jail, then you realize that we are locking up our people for those prison systems, because right now they're focused on the immigrant population, because they cannot get enough drug dealers, and everybody's making marijuana, because the most people that were locked up in jail is for marijuana. So if you don't lock those up, then who are you locking up? So now we've got immigrants that are roaming around. We got to put those in detention centers, which are actually prison. So we can continue this. So it's all about money. My mother used to say, when you see an injustice, follow the money. And that is, it is true. It has always been true.
Yeah, it's sad. It's sad. But okay, let's switch gears. Speaking of money, part of what we're doing here today is I wanted to raise awareness for what you're doing hopefully using my platform as a way to sort of spread beyond, you know, the normal bounds of what people see on This Week in Photo and other platforms. But how can people help? You, like we mentioned that you're the sort of master of grant writing, but that's not enough. How can people help, you know, with individual donations or other kinds of support? How can they help CAPS continue to do what you do?
Well, you know, I think if people just give, if everybody gave $5, we would have enough to help others get jobs faster, pay for training, get, because employers will say to you, I need somebody next week. Well, they don't have the shoes, they don't have the training, they don't have this, they don't have that. So they miss that opportunity. Donations help us get people to work faster. Government funding is wonderful and it is the foundation of it, but they have all these rules of how you can do this and how you do that. And sometimes it doesn't match with the employer demand. And if we're here and our goal is to get them a job, then we need that help. We need that help to get them, get the safety shoes or the safety glasses that they need or the equipment they need to get on that job so they can be the best candidate for the job.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, good. All right. Well, This Week in Photo listeners, you heard it. So $5, $10, $500, $10,000, whatever you want to
do. Oh, that was really helpful.
Yeah. Donate. And at the bottom of the screen here, you'll have seen, I'll put this in editing, but there'll be just a, you know, a link to your donate page that you guys have set up for people to donate if they want, or they can just head over to capsinc.org, which is the website. And let me bring that up so people can see what that looks like. There we go. So capsinc.org, well, you can head over there. At the top of the page, there is a big orange donate button. So if you want to donate to CAPS and or learn more about their mission or just reach out and say hello to Cheryl, just head over to that website and do your thing. Cheryl, what is next for the community assistance programs? What are you, what's the next step for you guys?
Well, we're really hoping that this new administration will put in place a Put Illinois to Work type program, which is a subsidized employment program. The employers are screaming for it. It will jumpstart our economy. It will put as many people that want to work, and it will do what our system needs to do to jumpstart our economy for people as well as for business. So we're asking for that, and we're asking for our government to restore the social services in our community because we've lost so many agencies, they've downsized, but the need is still there. It's not like people have gone away and you don't need this service anymore. No, they were downsized because their funding was directed to other places and to other things, and so therefore they didn't fund social services, but the people still need the help. So whatever you can do to help us, because we stay focused. Our job is to get people jobs. So we do that, and that reduces violence, and that's how we do it. And we know how to do it. We've done it very well. We've put thousands to work, and we work with thousands of employers, and we've helped thousands of people. So this is not something that is just fly by night that, you know, we just decide to do. We've been doing this for more, almost 20 years, yeah. And we're very good at it. So yeah. We just need help, and we really need the public to understand what this is all about, because that's how you stop it, is to educate the public.
Well, we'll continue to do what we can over here on This Week in Photo to help get the word out, and congratulations on everything you've done. I mean, you've built, yeah, I remember when you started the business and you've grown it to multiple offices and many employees and helped countless people and employers, you know, yeah. through positive efforts. So congratulations and bravo.
And thank you, Fred, for giving us this opportunity. I know this is outside of your beautiful photography, and I know people are saying, what is Fred talking about? But this shows that you have a social conscience. Everybody should have a social conscience, and I really appreciate yours.
Yeah, you're welcome. You know, I have to pay it back somehow, because you're one of the few people on the planet that have changed my diaper. and taught me how to drive. You remember?
Yeah,
you taught me how to drive. You remember?
Well,
and we almost had an accident.
But we survived. That's what life is about.
We survived. I learned a valuable lesson that day you were teaching me. I think it was in your new Camaro too, or something.
Oh, yes, it was.
I was driving that car, audience. I was driving that car, And I learned the lesson of you go where you look. And we were riding next to a semi truck, and I kept looking at the semi truck and going.
And I told you about that. You sneeze and wipe them out.
Yeah, you're like, stop, grab the wheel.
But you know what I want to say too, Fred? I want to thank you and your artistic eye, because you created our logo, and that logo has carried us for 20 years, and it's been outstanding. And people that can't read see our logo, and they go, oh, that's Caps. I know who that is, because they recognize the logo. We'll never change it, because it is a symbol to the community.
That is great. I can't believe that logo, and I remember when you asked me to build that, and that was like 20 years ago, right? I built that thing 20 years. I can't believe that I've been pushing pixels for 20 years.
And you're still so good at it.
Still doing it. I mean, you know, you love a thing, you keep doing it.
Yeah, you're a true artist.
All right, sis. I will let you go. Thanks again. Once again, people, if you want to check out community assistance programs, just head over to capsinc.org. And the URLs for donation and all that stuff will be in the description for this blog post, or in the body of the blog post, as well as the YouTube description. And that's it. Cheryl Holman, thank you so much.
Thank you. All right. I'm so glad. Thank you, Fred.
You're welcome, sis. See you later.
All right.
This is Twitter.